Arizona's news station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
You know, the state of Arizona, I've never known of it, you know, proportionate, but it is standard operating procedure that military bases and military funding are kind of spread out amongst the 50 states. It's why you have military installations in these bizarre places. Like, why is that? And they go, well, the great senator from the great state of, you know, who spent 40 years there made sure they got a base there. In Arizona, we have three, I would call them major military installations. Here in the Valley, we've got Luke Air Force Base out in the West Valley. Mm-hmm. Down in Tucson, you have Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. Out in Yuma, you have the Naval Air Station, but I think it's a Marine Corps station as well. So it's a joint base out there in Yuma. And let me throw Fort Huachuca in there, which is the Army's Communication Center down there, Sierra Vista, Arizona. We learned just this week that the Department of Defense says it will divert $3.8 billion from its budget under Trump's emergency authorization to build the wall.
How is that going to impact Arizona?
Because on that list are all of those military installations I just said, where they would lose very specific things. At Luke, it's the F-35 program is one of the things where they're going to pull money from.
The Pentagon will shift $3.8 billion from existing accounts to help fund 177 more miles of the border wall. It's the second year in a row that the Pentagon has shifted money around in order to meet a request from the Department of Homeland Security. Pentagon officials say the shift is necessary to help stop the flow of drugs across the border. But there is bipartisan criticism on Capitol Hill about the move that is seen as bypassing congressional control of the purse strings.
Okay.
So will you see, let's say, I think the most vulnerable person is Senator McSally.
And she's vulnerable because she
has a variety of reasons.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you know, in regards to this situation right here.
She is a veteran.
Yep.
She talks about strengthening the military. She
she's also talked about protecting these bases.
Absolutely, she
has. I mean, that was one of those, doing what's right for Arizona and protecting these bases is something that Senator McSally has ran upon and campaigned on.
For example, last year, Fort Huachuca, down there in Sierra Vista area, lost $30 million for a project they had that went towards the wall, okay? Senator McSally said last year that it would be, quote, seamlessly provided in the new defense budget. By the way, that did not happen.
This is the new defense budget.
And guess what? Not only is there not new money, we're taking more.
More away. So this puts her in a really difficult position because at this point in time, is Senator McSally going to come out and chastise this budget and say that she wouldn't support this budget and she doesn't support the cutting of these programs in Arizona because it's not what's best for Arizona? And also knowing that the cuts last year were not replenished this year.
Mm-hmm.
This is an election year.
Mm-hmm.
She's running for election.
Oh, yeah.
And you also have the president who's also running for reelection.
He cares about a wall more than he cares about Luke Air Force Base.
And I believe Senator McSally cares more about Luke Air Force Base than she does a wall. So how does she thread that needle? Because nobody wants to get no Republican, especially a Republican that is running for reelection in a state that's looked as a toss up and a seat that the Dems could pick up. Does she really want to rock the boat with this president?
So here is something. And I want to say this because I do think there is an argument to be had. The argument to be had is, are there cuts we could make in the military? Do we need everything that we currently have? The reason I bring that up is, I will point out, as a true conservative, we run it as a deficit. We have a record spending levels. I'm fine with taking $3.8 billion out of the military's budget, okay? I don't think it's going to make us any less safe, honestly. But don't go and put it into something else. That's still $3.8 billion we don't have. You see what I'm saying? So I'm willing to have the discussion about, do we need this program? Is this necessary? Do they have to have that many airplanes or this construction? Let's have the debate. But not because we want to spend the money on something else that's completely stupid, the wall. But why don't we address the fact that we have record debt and deficit right now, as any real conservative would be concerned about?
Hold your breath.
Yeah.
I rather don't.
Yeah.
You know, so how does Senator McSally navigate this in an election year is going to be fascinating to watch. What's also been pretty cool to watch is how Senator Kyrsten Sinema has been navigating D.C. This headline came out yesterday, and I admit I read it and I go, wow, didn't expect that. It reads as follow: Kyrsten Sinema to the right of Mitch McConnell in new legislative rankings. GovTrack.us is a nonpartisan organization, and they track a lot of government data, a lot of government statistics. And what they do is they will rank members from, like, the most conservative,
like, on a number one and number 100 on a scale.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And what we find out on this scale is that freshman Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema is actually ranked as more conservative on the conservative to liberal scale than Mitch McConnell.
Now, she is pretty darn close to the middle, and she's just
the Senate Majority Leader.
She's just right of center.
So she's ranked 47th.
So imagine the scale, liberal to conservative. One would be conservative, 100 would be liberal. She's 47.
Mitch McConnell is 49th.
Yeah.
I did not expect that. She is more conservative on the scale than the Senate Majority Leader, Republican Mitch McConnell.
I think the argument is, and maybe this plays well for Senator Sinema, is that she is in line with where the majority of Arizonans are. Not Arizonians. Arizonians.
Arizonans, yes. Let's go back to that. Yeah.
Even though she has a D next to her name, because we've said this before, the idea that all Ds or all Rs are the same, Senator Sinema, as a Democrat in Arizona, would be a right-wing Republican in Illinois or New state of New York. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you looked at that, but that's what a D is out here. That ain't what a D is on the East Coast.
Well, you can kind of make the comparison to Joe Manchin in West Virginia. Same kind of thing, right? He's a very conservative Democrat.
TV commercials that's what with you him need, shooting guns.
That's what you need to be in West Virginia.
It's to get elected, period.
So if you take a look at this even a little bit deeper, you find that Senator Sinema was ranked more conservative than the following Republican senators. Mm-hmm. She is more conservative than Rand Paul, Rob Portman, Richard Burr, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski. We think that that's a good place to be, but I don't know if the entire state of Arizona feels the same way. And not just that, how does the Democratic Party feel about that?
Well, but this is part of, we've talked before about during the State of the Union, when she stood up and applauded when others didn't, right?
And she was the adult
in the
room.
Her side of the aisle. I truly believe, and I do not know the senator personally, full stop. I think she is trying to craft, project, and sell a brand similar to Senator McCain. She is a maverick. She is an independent thinker. It doesn't matter if there's a D or an R next to her name. She's about Arizona, and she's going to do what she thinks is right, and no one's going to tell her what to do. And I think that plays well in Arizona. I think that's a good brand, but I think that's where she is trying to position herself, especially when you compare it to McSally, who I don't think has that brand at all. I don't think McSally can claim the maverick brand, no matter how many commercials she runs. Sinema shows it in her votes that she is, again, right, wrong, or different. You can not like her for it, but she appears to be representative of a majority of Arizonans, which is right of center.
And then, so how does that play out in the election this year? We have between Senator Martha McSally and Mark Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to find out.
Yeah, because I think being right of center helps you in Arizona. Being the bookend on the right does not help you. as we've seen in recent elections. That's not a good place to be.
The other thing, though, is if
that
you
would work,
be,
then Kelly Ward and Joe Arpaio would be in.
But the
Congress.
Same is true for the other side. You can't be
Bernie Sanders
bomb throwing.
No.
Yeah, you have to be more centrist in that regard as well,
which is what
Kyrsten Sinema is.
Exactly.
And is that what Mark Kelly is?
Yeah, okay.
I'm not exactly sure.
Not 100% sure.
Because I just don't feel like we know him yet.
He hasn't defined it. He should get out and define exactly who he is before somebody tries to define it for him, right? Mm. So why did a guy intentionally crash into a self-driving van here? We're going to tell you the story behind it. And it's maybe a good reminder to count backwards from 10 sometimes.
St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So we have seen the Waymo, specifically the Waymo vans, like minivans driving around. They're white. They got a little green logo on them. You and I, Pamela, took a ride from one. We went from downtown Chandler to the mall and back in a self-driving van. It was pretty amazing,
yeah,
right?
The technology is incredible.
And that was probably 2 years ago, so I can only imagine it's gotten better on some level. But that doesn't mean everybody's excited about the Waymo.
A former Waymo employee is under arrest for allegedly intentionally causing a crash that injured one person inside the self-driving car. Tempe Police Detective Greg Bacon says Raymond Tang was seen on video intentionally driving his vehicle in front of a Waymo car and then suddenly braking, causing the car to rear-end him.
There are open investigations in other jurisdictions of similar natures. This is definitely not the first one. It looks like these have been occurring since as early as late October in some of those other jurisdictions.
According to court documents, Waymo was Tang's former employer, but he was fired. He's now facing aggravated assault, criminal damage, and reckless driving charges.
All right. So we've got like a disgruntled former employee.
Former employee,
right?
Says, I'm going to show you. I'm going to go and try to get into an accident with one of your self-driving vehicles. If he's a former employee,
he should know better.
But not only that, don't you realize that they have like
cameras everywhere?
Absolutely everywhere. It's 360 degrees. If there's more degrees, they have it. You know,
he actually was a vehicle operator.
Yes.
And his employment with Waymo concluded a year ago. He was let go a year ago.
Yes.
Okay.
We wish him the best in his future.
Right. Exactly. The email went out. And he obviously was pretty ticked off about that still.
Okay.
Holding a grudge. Mm-hmm. It happens. But what's fascinating to me in situations like this is people going to seek revenge, right? That revenge of, I'm going to show Waymo. And this guy brake checks, admits to brake checking the Waymo vehicle that, you know, and what ended up happening, and the vehicle wasn't in the autonomous mode. There was actually somebody driving it.
So it had a human behind the wheel.
Had a human actually
driving.
Maybe
if it was in autonomous mode, it wouldn't have
gotten an accident. Maybe. And he was mad. He was angry. Uh-huh. He sees one of these Waymo cars and decides to seek revenge. And I wonder why people do that. Because in the moment, it may sound like a great idea.
Oh,
right?
It sounded good on
paper.
You
know what? I'm going to stick it to the man.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it to Waymo. Listen, Waymo is going to be just fine. You, on the other hand,
you
not so much. He's been charged with felony aggravated assault,
oof,
felony criminal damage.
Got it.
Misdemeanor charges of endangerment and reckless driving, and he's booked into the Tempe City Jail.
And it's, by the way, it's all on video.
This didn't end well. You know, revenge can blind you to the reality of the situation.
Hmm.
And I find it fascinating when people go, I'm going to go get him. Okay, that might feel good for like 30 seconds to 3 minutes, but then are you prepared for the fallout that that's going to lead to for the next 3 years?
Well, and here's something also to Mr. Tang has questionable judgment. I'm being nice, because he's suspected of being involved in other incidents with Waymo vehicles. This wasn't the first time.
Oh, with him?
He is a suspect.
I didn't realize that.
In other self-driving vehicle incidents in which damage was caused to them. So he's been on a one-man jihad against Waymo, and there is apparently, and if you worked for him, you had to know, there's video of everything that you did.
Right. So when Bruce and I were in the Waymo vehicle, it was pretty incredible just to see the technology in play. And I know some of you drive around in them all the time out there in the East Valley. I'm not one of them. I'm open to it. It's just not something that I regularly do. And, I mean, they pick up everything. The sensors are everywhere, and they have to. If a dog runs out in front of the street, if a kid runs out in front of the street, if the grocery cart, you know, goes haywire and goes out, like, the car has to stop. So they have to have the technology to pick all that stuff up. He obviously knew this and didn't care.
Right, because one of the things in if you're in one of these vehicles, remember the screen we could see?
Yeah, it was in the headrest.
And it was what the radar was seen, and you could see something as simple as a person standing between two vehicles.
Oh, it picks up everything.
And it picked up on this thing, and the computer's looking at that saying,
Be careful
if that person steps out.
We were driving, and there was a woman who was walking to the back of her trunk
to put
something in it.
Yes.
And the Waymo vehicle kind of like slowed down and scooted over a little
and
bit.
And gave her room to
picks
get into her
everything.
Trunk. And I was like, I don't do that.
He had to know that.
I don't care. No.
He was on a mission.
He
didn't think this through.
Think
and most
through.
People, when they're seeking revenge, don't.
Yes, but it wasn't like spur of the moment. Apparently, he's been doing this for a while.
Yeah, but he's not going to do it anymore.
No, he is not.
No. That's
fair.
Got two felony charges against you.
So, Mr. Tang is probably a great example, because I'm going to guess if he's got a Facebook page, he's been ranting and raving about the Waymo on it. Can a company decide not to hire you because of your social media post? What about freedom of speech? We're going to talk to an attorney. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
Bruce, I'll always love you, man.
I appreciate
that.
I'll always love you, too. There you go. Whitney says it best, right? Happy Valentine's Day. You know, we I remember the conversation we've had recently where more and more employers, when people are going ahead and applying for a job, that the employers are doing a little background search. And it's not like they're going to a background search company. They're going to the Facebook, the Twitter, the Instagram, and they're just looking at your posts.
Yeah, you know what? They're using the resources available to them. And we had some situations recently where people have suspected they didn't get the job or they're getting fired because of Facebook posts. And we wanted to dive a little bit deeper into that. So joining us right now in the KTAR studio is Jessica Post. Now, Jessica leads the Labor and Employment Practice Group at Fenimore Craig and deals with this pretty regularly. So we wanted an expert in here to help folks navigate what has now become quite commonplace. So good morning to you. Jessica.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So what kind of experiences have you had with either a company who has been, you know, had a claim filed against them for not hiring someone, or someone who thinks that they didn't get hired because of their social media posts? Is this becoming more common? Are you seeing more of this?
I would say on the pre-hiring process, I've not seen a lot of claims. I know that there have been brought. I haven't actually had to counsel employers in that particular pre-hiring. I have counseled employers when a claim is brought, or there's a situation actually with a current employee where the company or somebody at the company realizes that somebody made a post that was the ones that have actually come to me have actually usually been discriminatory posts.
So, Jessica, here's the thing that maybe it strikes me as might be hard to prove or hard to know. If an employer doesn't specifically tell you, we were going to hire you until we saw that, you know, you're the world
beer bong champion.
You know, and every single weekend you post, you know, how many beers you could drink. If they don't tell you, how do you know you were weeded out by your Facebook timeline?
I mean, generally you wouldn't know. And actually the example that you gave in terms of somebody who's like, hey, I'm on my, you know, 12th beer of the day, look at me. That would actually be a legitimate reason that an employer could say, looking at the Facebook page, you know, this person's not for us. We don't want them.
Okay.
But it is hard for an applicant, particularly if you have a big applicant pool, to suspect that there's something that they did post, like perhaps maybe they were pregnant, or perhaps they had a medical condition or something that would be in that protected category that they posted. It would be hard if you have a big applicant pool to be able to show that that information was learned and was part of a hiring decision by a company.
Again, we're talking with Jessica Post. She's the lead labor and employment practice group at Fenimore Craig. All right, so let's take it away from the applying for a job scenario, because it may be very difficult for you to know you didn't get that job or that job offer or that interview because of what you put on Facebook. And here's just a pro tip for you guys. If you're looking for a job, clean it up. Okay, just clean up the Facebook page before you even apply for a job, because this is what they're going to be doing and looking for anyway. But now let's take it into an office setting. You already have the job. You've been there for several years, and you post something on your personal time that the company doesn't like. Can they fire you for that?
It's going to depend on what is posted. So, and again, the one that's come to me is where somebody goes to social, you know, social media, Facebook. And it's funny, it used to be the case that somebody would, like, if you got really mad about something, maybe you would, like, write a letter and you wouldn't actually send it. But I think what happens in social media is people get mad and they post it.
Immediately.
And so the posts that have been problematic are when people have posted, like, a discriminatory comment.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's then come to the company because another employee is Facebook friends with the coworker and has said, hey, this person's making me uncomfortable. Look at this racist statement that they made online. And it's difficult because now as a company, you know, technically was that statement made on personal time? Sure. But it has entered into the workforce. And now as a company, we've got information that we've got somebody who's out there making these types of statements. And so a company will regularly terminate somebody for making a racist statement.
Well, we had that incident with police officers and social media posts, not just here in Phoenix, but around the country. Again, we're talking to Jessica Post, a labor and employment attorney over at Fenimore Craig. So it strikes me that, and I think I'm aware that most companies of a certain size have some sort of a policy of some way, shape, or form, whether it's specifically a social media policy or, you know, you just can't embarrass us, for goodness sakes, you know, on some level. But it strikes me that a lot of it is subjective. What is funny to one person is offensive to another, and you start getting into a heck of a lot of gray in there.
That's right.
Where are the, how do you determine where the line is? It feels like, I feel like, how about this? As an employee, I only know I crossed it until they told me I did.
And no, you're right. And there is gray. And so sometimes even in a situation that we have where somebody's perceived that another coworker's made a discriminatory statement, well, they might be themselves in a protected class, and maybe the statement's kind of gray. Maybe they're supporting somebody who's perceived as racially intolerant. And so it is complicated, and that's where companies will usually consult with me or, you know, a labor and employment attorney to try to weigh the risks, because some of those situations could be, hey, if we terminate the person, we're looking at a claim from them.
Right.
If
they have an argument, too.
Yeah. That's right.
Is there anything that somebody could post that would be off limits to an employer to consider for termination and discriminatory? Oh.
Sure. So you actually earlier raised the example of where somebody posts something about their own company that they don't like it. Well, that's actually a very we have to be very careful as an employer in that circumstance, because employees who are allowed to, they're not supervisors, they're allowed to collectively bargain, they're actually allowed to say negative statements about their about a supervisor
Hold
or about working
second.
Conditions.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
I don't get any idea.
Okay, I'm sorry.
All right.
It's only certain groups at companies.
Yes. Okay.
How come I want to guess I'm not in that group,
no.
right?
Yeah. But no, we're very careful when an employee actually says, hey, I'm not paid enough at my job, or a bunch of
complain about a working environment or something.
That
is considered, if you will, that employees having a discussion about that.
That's right. That's a very dangerous area for companies.
Jessica Post, again, she leads the labor and employment practice group at Fenimore Craig. One last question for you, because most people listening right now are on social media in some capacity, whether it be Instagram, whether it be Facebook, TikTok, whatever you want, Snapchat.
Wow.
Do you have any kind of one nugget, one piece of information that you would recommend that somebody who's either looking for a job or somebody who wants to keep their job, what do they need to keep in mind when navigating some of the minefields that can come with social media?
I would say probably two things. I would say first is that your social media page can actually help you, right? So LinkedIn is one that a lot of people use. Companies a lot of times validate what somebody says during an interview by going to LinkedIn. So if your LinkedIn page is good and in line with your resume, you've actually helped yourself as a candidate. But yeah, that's right. but I do think that, you know, if your urge is to constantly post, you should think about that, because that's sort of in that category where employers look at somebody and they're like, well, they're constantly posting, they're critical about this, that, and it's harder to actually for sure get a job.
Outstanding. Jessica, thank you for your time today. We do appreciate it. And again, there's some lessons in there. They strike me as a lot of common sense, Pamela. A lot of common sense lessons. But
the thing is,
I got to tell you,
sense,
as someone who hired people, yeah, it's amazing how little common sense is actually
common
out there.
Common sense not so common.
Yeah. You would think. How did Tucson Unified School District, the big school district down in Tucson, rack up about $1 million in lunch debt? How did that happen? How do you do that? What are they eating for lunch? We're going to talk about that. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station, KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
I can't think of the Bee Gees without, I get this image in my head. That Barry Gibb.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what Jesus looks like? I mean, he's like the living embodiment, right?
Deep thoughts by Bruce St. James on this Valentine's Day.
I'm like, I think that's what he looks like.
Maybe.
Okay. So we've had these, do you remember these conversation? I want to say, is the term lunch shaming?
Yeah,
am
exactly
I getting that right?
Yep.
And so lunch shaming is a relatively new term. I've never had it happen in my life, where kids at schools don't have money for lunch, for the lunch period, and so they don't get to eat the same lunch as the other kids mm-hmm. do. They get some sort of bare bones lunch, right? Like PB&J. That's lunch shaming. So in Tucson, TUSD.
So they say. I don't agree with that, but yes, that's the
I'm
concept.
I'm trying to give the definition
that's
of it.
That's the
right.
concept, sure.
So in Tucson, TUSD is the school district. It's 90% of the schools. Don't quote me on that, but when I was there, there was TUSD and nothing else, okay? So it is basically the entire school system in the city of Tucson. So it's pretty large, right? And they have been, I'm gonna argue, struggling with the lunch shaming concept.
Okay, now struggling financially because of it. I got to take you prior to 2017, so just a few years ago, they had a cap, and the cap was students who didn't pay for two meals had to get one of these lower paying kind of meals, like a bagel for breakfast or a grilled cheese sandwich for lunch.
They didn't get the Salisbury steak and tots.
Yeah, which, you know what? I'll take the grilled cheese sandwich over the Salisbury steak and mystery meat any day of the week. But mid 2017, there was the Federal Anti-Lunch Shaming Act, which let schools provide a meal regardless of whether or not the student had money to pay. So we've heard all this before. Why are we talking about it right now? Prior to changing their policy, pre-2017, Tucson Unified School District said, you know what, you have two meal capacity, right? After you've charged two meals, you're cut off and you've got to get the grilled cheese sandwich.
No soup for you.
At that point in time, on average, they would carry over a debt of about $20,000 to $25,000 a year in unpaid lunch debt. That's a lot.
It seems like a lot.
$20,000 to $25,000
unpaid lunch debt.
The first year the district stopped that two lunch cap.
Okay, we're not going to do charges anymore. We're not going to shame these kids for not paying for their lunch.
We're unlimited. You know what I mean? We're not going to cap them at
run
two.
Run the tab.
It went from like $20,000, $25,000.
Right, up to like $50,000, right?
To $230,000. Last year.
Okay.
$365,000.
In unpaid lunches.
But wait, there's more. The district is on track.
Oh, boy.
To end the current year.
Yeah.
With anywhere from $700,000 to $1 million tab in unpaid lunches.
I find it hard to believe that TUSD is a unique school district in Arizona where they're just sitting on all this extra cash as well. So
no school in Arizona sitting on any extra cash.
So the fact that they basically can't charge for lunch. And people, I mean, I think it's obvious that people are taking advantage of this.
Well, they charge. It's just not getting paid.
Right. And you can run up an unpaid balance.
So they're going back. They're going back to the two lunch cap. So they're going back to, you know what, you got two strikes. Now, a lot of the district, about 70% of the student body in that district qualifies for free and reduced lunch.
Yeah.
So roughly you have 30% of the population that's ringing up this tab. Now, is it taking advantage of it? I'm sure there's a part of that.
It's what it feels like.
Are there other families who are under financial hardship? Yeah, that might be part of it. I think what's probably even a bigger aspect of it is parents sometimes forget to put money on the student's account and didn't realize that the kids are just racking it up.
I used to get it on the kitchen counter with my lunch money.
Because I don't know if many parents even recognize that being charged is an option.
How do you run up a debt? Okay, when I was in school, you had to pay money for it.
No, that's changed.
I had to give them dollar bills,
well,
y'all.
We had to give tickets. That's not what happened.
I didn't have tickets.
We
I had to
online.
Give them money.
No, we go
money.
Online and we put money in Riley's account.
Go back to the money system and you would break
you,
this.
You might have that down in Tucson. But I think, yeah, the headline that
they could run up $1 million in lunch debt in 1 year.
And
2 years ago it was $25,000.
And you're concerned about a kid getting a grilled cheese sandwich instead.
I don't think that's the worst case scenario. I think
no,
the million dollar debt's
yeah,
worse.
Yeah, you and I both, man.
Right there with you. Good night, Irene. Active shooter drills. Speaking of schools, do they unnecessarily scare kids? We're going to be talking about that. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.